This is Bob Stone for Florida Folk Life Programs. I'm at the home of Vita Plummer with Lucille Francis Fuller, Vita Plummer, and Sophia Campbell. It's June 16th, 1991. We're documenting the Folk Arts Apprenticeship Program. First, one of the first things I remember, Lucille, is there's a little saying that you use for ending a story. What is that?
Oh, it's Jack Mandora may not choose no more.
What is that? Where does that come from? What does that mean?
Yes, it does. You see, back there in the olden days, our grandparents believed that ghosts were always around listening to them whenever they were telling stories. So they ended stories by saying, "Jack Mandora may not choose no more," to appease the ghosts, so that the ghost will realize that that's the end of storytelling tonight. So they go away, go get the rest, because no more story will be told on that particular night.
Well, who's Jack
Mandora? It's referring to the ghosts. Ghosts at our room, but they just term that one name, Jack Mandora. So they are telling, whoever telling the story is saying, "Jack Mandora may not choose no more. I don't choose to tell any more story." That's it.
And Jack Mandora is a generic name
for ghosts.
Right. Is there anything that goes on starting
They don't generally beg, but whenever stories are told to kids, children at home, they have to have had good behavior that day, they have to finish all whatever they have to do, and then they come and in a very humble way saying, "Could you please tell us a story? Please tell us a story." And then the person telling the story would say, "Did you do all you had to do? Do you have anything else to do? Have you been good today?" And said, "Yes, yes, we have been good today." And then the storyteller sometimes starts off with the saying, "Once upon a time, long, long time ago." That's the general format that was usually used.
Can you use that Jack Mandora and YouTube more every time? Pretty much?
Yes, basically all the time.
And is that pretty much all Jamaican storytellers do that, or is that in a certain area, or do you know?
Well, generally, but you will find in some parts of Jamaica where they would just end the story by saying, "And this is the end of the story." Or they might say, "Come back next time and you'll hear some more." Because you see, although Jamaica is an island, but people in different parts of Jamaica behave differently. For example, in the far east, you have the Maroons, and the attitudes of the Maroons differ from the other folks. And in the far west, you have German community, and the Germans behave differently. At one stage, they did not intermarry with the other folks. They tried to keep that community German. Well, later on, you know, young people, they go out and they intermarry, and as a result, their basic customs change. So you would find areas in Jamaica that they tell the stories, start out differently, and finish differently. But the majority, the average storyteller, would start by saying, "Once upon a time, long time ago," and end by saying, "Jack Mandora may not choose no more."
Well, let me get straight. Where you were born and where you were raised?
I was born in the parish of Portland, and that is East Jamaica. And it's near to the Maroon town. My own father was a half Maroon.
And what city is that here?
Moortown.
Yes. What's Maroon?
Maroons are a set of people that originally ran away from their slave masters. Some were Spanish, and some were black, some were Indians. But basically, long, long time ago, those first slaves that ran away from the master and ran up into the hills, before the English occupation, and in the earlier part of the English occupation, and they were a force there that always kept the English soldiers at bay, because they had this particular lady by the name of Nanny, who has been termed as one of the national heroes of Jamaica. She was in the Maroon Town in East, that's Moortown. She was very clever, and people looked on her as a role model. She was very tricky too. And for example, she would have a whole group of soldiers or own men up there to fight against intruders. And she would disguise her men by using the leaves from various trees and branches and clothe them, as it were. Put the leaves and branches all over them, over the head, the face, and have them like an ambush in the area there. And when the English soldiers were coming by, they look around, all they saw was leaves. So they thought they were just trees. And the tracks through the mountains were of such that when they go around these corners, they were enclosed. They couldn't get back out the way they went in. And there were actually no way for them to escape. And while they were in those little areas, the Nanny and her men would just come out at them, encircle them, and capture them. And another trick Nanny used to play on them is she had a narrow path along the mountain. And that path leads all the way to an area where she had a big pot. And that pot was made out of clay, a big clay pot. And it was there boiling all the time. And strangely, there was no fire under that pot. But just opposite to where the pot was, there was a deep precipice, a descent, a gully. And when the men came around, the English soldiers came around, they were excited by seeing the pot boiling without fire. And as they ventured to look into it, they would jump up and they fall right over that gully, right over the precipice. And each soldier would have done the same thing. And at that time, Nanny was hiding nearby. And when the last soldier came and about to look into the pot, she would jump out and grab him by the neck and pull him back and said, "Don't you look. Look over here and see what has happened to your men." And when he looked over and saw all the men lying on the other side, she would say to him, "Now, you go back and tell your master what you have seen." So those soldiers were always scared of going up into the mountains, the Blue Mountains. Those were in the Blue Mountains, areas of the Blue Mountains. And you must have known that the Blue Mountains are the highest mountains in Jamaica. They rank like over 7,000 feet high. Pretty wow. High, yeah. Yes. So out there in the Blue Mountains, Nanny and her men were always out there in hiding. And so, those so are some
Nanny,
of the tricks.
What's Nanny, a real person?
Yes,
yeah.
She was a real person.
She really existed.
Yes, a woman, a very dynamic, aggressive, assertive woman.
When was this? What period?
That was way back in the, I would say, maybe 18th century.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it was way back, because slavery was abolished in Jamaica in 1840 something, I think, and that was long before slavery was abolished. So okay. It was a good way back. But I don't know if she had there was something special about her, because according to history, she lived a very long time, according to what her grandparents told us. It's like she lived for extra years and years.
Do you know any other name for her other than Nanny?
No.
That's it.
Nanny.
That's all we know,
Nanny. In the West, there was another Maroon town by the name of, the name slipped me right now, but it was in Trelawney. And the leader of that Maroon group was Kodjo. Yes, that's an African name, Kodjo. But he wasn't as outstanding as Nani.
Let's get back to the stories. That's great. What is it, and I'd like to hear from you, the apprentices too.
Yes.
What is it that makes a good story? What are you after when you're trying to make your story?
You want to answer?
You can start.
Well, I would say it's basically twofold. A good story told when I was growing up was basically for entertainment, because there wasn't radios and other form of medias through which people were entertained. So that was basically the number one reason for entertainment. But in addition to that, those stories depict, tells of how these slaves were being treated, and they could come out as overcomers. For example, when an Anansi story is being told, Anansi is a small creature, is a spider. But Anansi works in the form of a human being, and as such, is always winning. He's always victorious over his enemies. So they were really telling us that although they were slaves, but they could be victorious. They could be winners. They were not, they never had to really succumb to their physical condition. They were to look beyond. So in most of these stories, there were morals in it.
And it sounds like it gave you something to go on.
Yes.
When times were pretty dark.
Pretty dark and rough.
Pretty
yes.
Rough. You could think back on these stories. It gave you hope.
Yes, open inspiration. You can look back and said, well, this is not all. There is something out there that you can reach out to. And I want to tell you, Bob, even now, in my going around to schools, libraries, and festivals like your
folk festival.
When I go to schools, I try to get youngsters to value themselves and to have a high self-esteem. I try to get them not to look on themselves, say, well, I'm from a poor family, poor country, I'm black, or whatever, and therefore there's nothing I can do. Because we use these stories as example. Those days, take Nani for example, she was a woman, and she was a slave, but she got away and she got out there in the mountains, and she did not lay down hands and said, well, I have nothing to live by, I'm going to die, nothing to live for. She made strides and went forward and even got her people together and trained them. So I try to put in youngsters this type of assertiveness and to let them value themselves. You are who you are and you can be whatever you want to be. You don't have to look down on yourselves and pity yourselves. You can reach the highest height of human thought, imagination, whatever. Have dreams and live up to these dreams. And, you know, the youngsters, they really, they have got a lot out of what I offer them. Mm-hmm. And I'm really serious and dedicated to this because I really want to see our young people look forward with hope and aspiration and work towards it. It takes hard work.
Oh, yeah.
But then when you get over these obstacles, you can look back and be proud of yourselves. You see where you're coming from and where you are. You can be proud of yourselves. And I try to put this forward for our young people to see it. And I'm glad I'm reaching a large population of the minorities, uh-huh, in particular. Yes, because you might have known that I have been participating in the educational channel on Channel 14 Cable TV.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. And I have a show that comes over 3 times a week.
I didn't know
Monday at 7:30, Wednesday at 4 o'clock, and Friday at 10 in the morning. And this is really what I have been projecting. And schools all around and people calling.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah.
What is that, an educational channel?
Yes, educational channel.
Who runs it? Where does it come from?
Cable TV.
Is it sponsored by the school system?
It's... our little organization is a non-profit organization, and we do it just to benefit the community.
What's the name of the organization?
Just the way it was.
Just the way it was.
Uh-huh.
Oh
yes, it's about, this is we are almost 2 years since we are in operation.
Do you have any literature or anything on that?
Very little, but I can find something
for
you.
Anything you could give me that would be nice.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing here is that you place a very high level of importance on the content.
Yes.
Of the story.
Yes.
And the message.
Yes.
And the
message. Yes.
Yes. Okay. I might imagine that another part of it is the telling of the story.
Yes.
And so...
Well, you see...
The telling of... What makes a good storyteller?
A good storyteller is one that is really interested in the contents of the story. And you are really telling a story. You are telling something. And what you put into it. For example, I would term myself as a very dramatic storyteller. I put my whole self into it because that's how I feel about it. And that's how I want my listeners to see me and to see themselves there, not as Adam and Dom and people just there sitting, can do nothing, but, you know, with a lot of life and enthusiasm. So I put my whole self into it. So that has a lot to do. And you see, I tell stories a lot to school children.
Mm-hmm.
And their attention span is limited. And as such, you have to be very dramatic to hold their attention.
What ages mostly do you work?
Right through the school. Kindergarten, right up to senior, the 12th grade. I have been telling stories right through the schools,
system. How do you get into the school system?
Well, because we have had these television show, different schools calling and requests.
That's great.
For us to come in and tell them
That's
stories.
Great.
And we schedule the schools
and
we go
on
in.
On TV, you tell them how they can get in touch.
Yes.
That's
we
great.
Give them address, thing, and telephone.
What are some of your favorite stories?
My favorite stories, for example, have Brother Nancy and the bird Cherry Island. I love that one. And then I have Brother Rabbit and Brother Tarpin. We don't pronounce brother as such when we are telling the story. We say bra.
Bra
Nancy and Bra Tarpin.
Tarpin, the turtle.
The turtle. Uh-huh. Yes. And then stories like Brother Anansi and Brother Dryhead. That's a very unique character too. We have Brother Anansi and the tar baby. And we have Brother Nancy and Brother Alligator. Brother Nancy and Brother Ghost. Brother Nancy and the Jumbies are the Dopies. And we have...
And those are ghosts too.
Yes, Dopies are ghosts, Jumbies, who are different names.
Jumbie, how might I spell that if I was going to write that?
J-U-M-B-I-E, Jumbie.
And the Dopies?
D-U-P-P-I-E-S, Dopies. D-U-P-P-Y. Can be D-U-P-P-Y for Dopey, D-U-P-P-I-E-S, Dopeys.
Right.
And Ghost. They're all the same.
I might have guessed, you know, you've always seemed to bring up Brother Anansi.
Yes.
Yeah, you really like him.
Yes.
And I can see the symbolism.
Brother Anansi. We have Big Boy and Brother Dryfoot, and we have...
Big Boy, some of those get a little risque, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I have a book back at the office that talk about Big Boy. And who else were you saying? Bigfoot?
Dryfoot.
Dryfoot.
Yes, and...
what kind of character is Dryfoot?
Dryfoot, you know, is more like a person-like, but the... Say what you're saying.
He's an imaginary person. You take him and you make him into something particularly if you want to give an example to a child of something that might have happened that the child should have known better. And you use this imaginary dry foot to explain away what it is you're trying to get across.
So does dry foot usually go wrong, or is he doing the right thing, or what? How do you use him? Can you give an example?
Well, dry foot usually is the one that, goes in the right way. And if you went the wrong way, then you would use the dry foot to show you where this is how you should have done
it. So dry foot does it right, where Kwaku does it wrong, right?
Oh, yes. Kwaku is so stupid.
Right, he always messes up.
Yeah, Kwaku messes up all the time.
So you have both sides of the coin there.
Yes.
What, back to Lucia, what are some of your earliest recollections of storytelling? How did, and when did you, as far as hearing them first, who did you hear from, and who were some of your favorites? And where in your life, at what point in your life is this going on? And then when did you start telling stories and think of yourself as a storyteller?
Okay, I heard stories when I was a little girl, like maybe 4 years old, as early as I can remember.
And this was back in Portland?
Yes, in Portland, Jamaica. As early as I can remember, they used to tell a story. You see, I am the eighth child for my mother. So there were bigger ones there, older kids that they tell stories, and then everybody would fall in and listen. So as far back as I can remember, and the most outstanding person who used to tell us stories were my grandmother and my father.
Now, your grandmother from?
From my mother.
So your maternal grandmother?
Yes, my maternal grandmother and my father.
And your father.
Yes.
Both storytellers.
Yes. My mother generally didn't tell us much stories, but my grandmother, and I used to spend a lot of time around my grandmother.
And what sort of stories did you get from her? Get the Anansi stories?
Anansi stories. And then I get most of the dopey stories from my father.
So is this rather typical as far as might there be a division between
yes.
men and women and the
yes.
kind of stories?
Yes.
Men would tell more ghost stories?
Most ghost stories, more frightening stories. Yes, when you
macho.
Yeah. When you sit and listen to one of those ghost stories told by my father, you don't want to go back outside for that night. You don't want to go. If they were told on the veranda, what we call porch here, then you just come in. Yeah, inside. You're not going outside for the night.
Usually you come in backwards. Because if you come the other way, you might see your shadow.
Yes,
you come inside,
yes,
backwards.
Inside, yeah. You don't even want to turn your back.
No. You're back into the house.
In the house. And about rolling calf and ball of fire. Ball of fire is a ghost, but a dead
like
person.
Fire.
But it's a big ball of fire just tumbling along the ground coming. And the rolling calf is ghost with the big chain that they used to chain the slaves. And that slave person die, and the ghost coming down the hill, the big long chain just rocking, burring, pum pum burrum, all the way coming down the hill. And you see, Jamaica is very mountainous, so it's always coming down the hill, or going up the hill, or going around the curves. So yes, I'm answering to your question. So as far back as I can remember, I stories used to be told to me.
So your maternal grandmother
and my father.
And your grandmother was mostly a source of the
Anansi stories.
Anything
yes.
else that she was a source of stories?
Well, yes, she would tell us stories of what things about old slaveries and slaves and what used to happen back there. What her grandmother told her.
Uh-huh.
So they were coming from a way back.
So they were. Oral history.
Yes, thing. Oral history.
How about school? What school was available? What did you have? Was this school good?
Yes, I went to elementary school, and elementary school was from grade one, that we call grade one now. What do you call it? ABC. Okay.
You had three stages of kindergarten.
Yes, you would call that. Yes, but the kindergarten child has to be, I think, about 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
that's the first time the child would go to the government school, the public school, is at 6 years, and that child would go in A class, and then the next year they go in B, and then the next year in first class. And the general go at 6. For me, my first year at school, I was in my 8th year of life when I went to school for the first time. But it didn't bother me because they put me in A class and my next move was first. Because of my maturity, but I skipped over. And went through school. Teachers back there, they never used to tell us stories of such. We read stories from books too.
Were your teachers usually black or white?
Black. Uh-huh. Black teachers. Male principal, basically.
Did you go to like a country school with a lot of grade levels in one room or something like that?
Yes, yes. Yes. The school I went, grade A, B, and first was in one room. And second to six, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, were in one room.
Just to get it in perspective, while we're talking, what year were you born in?
1937. Okay. Not very long.
And Vida, you were born in Jamaica also?
Yes.
What year?
1945.
45.
Yeah.
Okay, so that'll help me.
Yes, to what period of time you are talking about. But then they used to divide the classrooms with chalkboard, blackboard between. And I read stories in addition to what I was told. And my first time of telling stories was when my younger peer, what you call them?
Siblings.
Yes, I used to tell stories to the younger ones.
Where were you? Were you in the middle of your...
Yes. My mother had 7 children before me and 7 after me. Well, all of them never survived. Some died.
Yeah.
Some died. But I was the 8th child. And then I had nieces and nephew who would come over. And then I was so much in the story thing, I would tell them stories. And they would come listen to me.
And what age were you by then? When you were...
Maybe about 10, 11 years old. You know, I tell them some of what I remember. And we used to do it as a game. And they come and I tell... And suppose I'm telling them a ghost story. You would rattle something and they would get scared. And things like that, you know. But I used to love it. Then when I became a school teacher, oh yes, I always get my kids quiet. I just have to begin to tell them a story. Well, it's story time, and everybody would prop up and sit up and ready to listen. My first class I taught was the second grade.
And when was that? How old were you?
That was long. That was a long time after. Because when I left elementary school, I did not go straight to high school. I left elementary school at age 15. And at 15, I had already spent the second year in the highest class. Mm-hmm. That's 6th class. So I stayed 2 years in it because there was no higher class for me to go. Mm-hmm. And then I left at 15. And I did not go to high school until I was, 21 years old. So I sent myself to high school. I left elementary school, I went and work, and then I save. I work with East Jamaica Conference of Seventh-day Adventists as a literature evangelist, selling religious, educational, and medical books. And then I save, and I got a scholarship from them, and that was the time I was able to go to high school. So I went to Kingsway High School when I was about 21, 22 years old. I spent 4.5 years at high school. After graduating from high school, then I started teaching as a pre-trained teacher. After I taught for the first semester, I went to junior college and was trained to teach in law school. That is up to grade 5. And I taught for 1 year as such. And then I went to Michael Teachers College, which was a senior college, for 3 years. I did 2 years in and 1 year of internship, was graduated. And then I started teaching at any level in the school. After I taught for the first year as a classroom teacher, second year, the third year, I got a country school as a principal. And from then, I taught as a principal in the Jamaican government system until I left to the United States. And that was in 1980. I came here in 1980, April of 1980. When I had my own children, I told them stories. They always come around for stories. I sit in the bed with them, I tell them stories, and they are just sleep. Always tell them stories in bed. So that's basically how I got into story and how I've been telling stories. And then I started like making a collection of stories. And then there's this woman, Louise Bennett Coverley. I don't know if you have heard her or met her. She was the first lady of comedy in Jamaica. And I have met her when I was teaching as a pre-trained teacher. And I always admire her telling stories and doing pantomimes and drama.
What's her, could you spell her name?
Louise Bennett Coverley. Spell for me, Rita.
B-E-N-N.
See, that's it. Coverley is her married name. So she goes by. Yeah, she married to that man.
Coverley.
And she's the first lady
of comedy in Jamaica.
Okay. And you met her?
Yes.
And what did you get from her? Did she teach you?
No, she didn't teach me. I just watched her and listened to her.
Where did you watch her? Where did you see her?
In pantomime, in Jamaica, and in different appearances.
Any particular town or any?
Kingston.
So in your adult life in Jamaica,
yes.
You lived in Kingston.
Yes.
How far is that from Portland, where you live?
It's 65 miles. But 65 miles is a lot of miles in Jamaica.
Something I thought of. What did your family do for a living?
Oh, my father was a farmer and my mother was a housewife.
What did your, imagine with 14 kids?
Yes. I had to plant a lot of food.
What kind of farming did he do?
He planted, what do you call that kind of farm? He planted like brown provigil yams and cassavas and peas and beans and corn and carrots and turnip and pumpkin and chouchas and those type of stuff.
And how did he sell us?
He market them for bananas. Banana used to be one of the staple crops in Jamaica.
So he sold his produce himself. He
yes.
wasn't a sharecropper. Or
he sold it himself.
Uh-huh.
Banana.
Did he own the land or just have?
Most of the land he farm on, he never own it.
Uh-huh.
He farm on lease or crown land, CROWN
right.
land,
uh-huh.
belongs to the government,
uh-huh.
but they give it to people to farm
uh-huh.
on. So where he had his big farm, they were either lease. Our crown land, different
how
from where we live.
Farm did he have, you know?
Well, like acres, some acres of it. I don't have an actual
island,
estimate.
It probably wasn't real big.
Not real big.
Did he just work it himself?
No,
they
work in groups. They call it partners. Like my father would go and work for one man today. Another man tomorrow, another man, and he would have worked for 9 men.
Mm-hmm.
And when he goes to work for one person, 9 other person are working for that one person. So it's a group of 10
right.
men working for one man. And it goes around in a circle like that until it's this his term. These 9 men along with himself come and cut his land.
Uh-huh.
And then on another day, the 9 men and himself plow the land. And another day, the 9 men and himself plant the plants.
Is there a name for that? Just partners?
What they call it?
Partners is what I
mean. Partners. Partners. They work in partners, as
partnerships.
Partnership.
Yeah.
Was it formal or just something that they agreed upon themselves.
They just agree upon it themselves.
Right.
Yes, so they had that.
They rotated it.
And then the women cook
while
the men work.
Yeah, but then when it came time to sell the crop, each man got the money for his own
for
crop.
His
yes.
He didn't have to split it with
them. Oh, no. Oh, no.
They just shared in the work.
They're sharing the work.
And then if they had, like, one of them needed to build something at his house or fix his roof or something, they do have what they call a morning match.
Morning work, yes.
And then 6 o'clock in the morning, everybody would meet at his
come
house.
Together.
They would, of course, have all the materials ready, and they would come. And that morning, everybody would work,
yeah.
while the women would make this big
make
cooking,
the big cooking
for the food.
For
and
the
by
breakfast.
Lunchtime, everything would be
everything
finished. Because everybody would come in and pitch in and
yes.
finish the work.
Some doing the nails, some doing this, that, and the entire thing would be finished. And that's the system they used to go by, working. I was telling you how, like, the bananas. He would have some of these same men come to take the bananas. They have mules and donkeys, and they would put bunches of bananas on the donkey, and men carry on the head and take it out to where the truck can come and take them to the wharf. And those bananas were sent to, like, America here, or England, or
mm-hmm.
other countries.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the stories again.
Uh-huh.
Do you try and polish the story or make it? There's probably stories you've been telling for a long time, right? Are you conscious of trying to make them better and better as you tell them? Or, you know, what goes on?
I always like to tell them as they are. Because if I should try to polish them up to an extent, then it would have lost its real meaning and the real significance of what you're trying to pass on. So I generally pass them on just as I got them. I would stop to break down and give some explanation as to why this was so and how this came about and how is this related to this or in this situation. But I prefer giving them just as I got them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're back on the air here. Lucille, where do you think that Sophia and Peter have made their most progress as far as learning the stories and how to tell them?
Sophia, for example, in just listening to me telling her stories, which I always do, and looking at the way in which I tell my stories, I think she has learned there how to tell stories.
About how many stories does she know now? About
how many stories do you know, Sophia? 20, 30, 15? Sit up and tell us.
I think about 15.
About 15?
Mostly Anansi stories, or...?
It varies because I know some about men and then different types of animals that they tell stories about.
How about Vita? What do you think that she's progressed most on?
And telling stories. Yeah.
The actual telling of them?
Yes. I've gone through a lot of stories with Vita, and Vita being an experienced person who should have listened to story herself, even prior to me teaching her how to tell story. What I have been trying to teach Vita mostly is in the presentation of the stories. You know, if you want to hold your audience out there, then you have to be somewhat dramatic in presenting it. So I mostly emphasize with her the presentation of stories.
We'll get into that some more. Where do you think they need their most work yet? I mean, and how far along do you feature both Sophia and Vita? And how far have they come?
I think they have progressed sufficiently that they can participate independently in the next festival. you'll be having. What will you, how,
you got the harvest coming up in the fall, too.
Yes, in March. Oh, yes, I hope they'll be included in it. Sophia was there last time. She told stories at the harvest. Yes, and from my experience, Vita is sufficiently prepared that she can man her own area in telling stories at the harvest, the festival, or your annual thing there.
Does it, do you feature that it takes some length of time before somebody's like a really accomplished storyteller? For instance, somebody might say, it takes 10 years to make a fiddler. Or it takes 20 years to make a good farmer. Okay, a farmer who really knows what he's doing, or 30 years, or you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You think there's that sort of thing? How do you see that?
It depends on the individual. But I would say it takes a number of years, really, to really get into it and get it into your system that you become a part of it.
What are some of the last things to come? You know, are there, for instance, there might be something that, I know in other arts, somebody say, you know, this part of it didn't come until just recently. After 20 years, I finally realized that this is, you know, kind of the meat of it, or the final polish, or whatever. What would those sorts of things be?
I would think of It would take the longest time or the most time for you to really be, for storytelling to be a part of you. It's automatic, you know, to be a part of it. Not just to know the story, memorize it, but it to be a part of you. You can actually feel the stories. You are so involved that it's really a part of you. It's like if you, let me look at this analogy, like a preacher. And a preacher might be preaching for years or so, and he knows he can prepare a sermon coming down. But call on a preacher at random.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you explain the virgin birth of Jesus? And at random, he can just spit it out, just tell you. You know, it's all in him. It's wrapped up in him there. And he can just tell you. He doesn't have to go research anything.
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing. You just call on Vita or Sophia at random and say, well, I would like to hear a story about birds. These children love birds, and they would like to hear a story about birds. Or these children are from a water area where they're accustomed to crocodiles, alligators, and so on. Can you tell them a story about water animals, water creatures? And it's just there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there, you know.
So, yeah, so part of it is developing a stock of stories, a repertoire.
Yes, a repertoire.
That fits wherever. Situations, whatever might arise.
Yes.
That takes time.
Yes, it takes, yes, it
and
does.
Really get the characters inside of you.
Yeah.
So, that's great.
Okay, today I'm going to tell you a very short story. As a Jamaican storyteller, we always like to tell stories about animals, places, ghosts, and people. The story I'm going to tell you today is about Brother Nancy and Brother Dryhead. Okay, Brother Dryhead is a special person, and I'm not going to tell you much about him right here, but Brother Nancy, as I have said before, is a clever man. He's really a spider, but this time in this story he's a man with his wife and children. One day Brother Nancy found life was getting very, very difficult. As a result of that, he decided to play a trick on all the other animals to see if he could catch them. And listen to the trick. He said no one should talk anything bad about the other person. Everyone should always say something good about the next person. So Brother Nancy decided very early one morning that he's going out into the hills. And he got his pickaxe and he went all the way down the street and up into the hills. And he went on a mountain, a clean mountain top. No earth, just a rock standing in the middle of the mountain area. And Brother Nancy went up there and this road was right below and everyone was passing by. And Brother Nancy took up his pickaxe and he started to dig, as it were. Pang! 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 Pang on the rock top. Pang! Pang! Pang on the rock top. Just then, Brother Tukuma passed by. Brother Tukuma stopped, he put his on his pocket and he looked up on the rock top and he said, "Good morning, Brother Nancy." He said, "Good morning, my boy." Brother Tukuma said, "What are you doing up there?" And Brother Nancy leaned back on the stick of the pickaxe and he said, "Ha, my boy, it is so hard. I'm planting some corn. See these corn holes I'm digging? Hang, hang, hang." And the clear, clear rock. Brother Tukuma said, "All right, Brother Nancy, bye." And he went around the street. And as he got out of Brother Nancy's sight, round the corner, Brother Tukuma stopped. He stood up and he said, "Lord, my Lord, can someone plant corn on the top of a rock?" Brother Tukuma dropped down. He fell right down in the road and he could not move because he should not have criticized Brother Nancy. Brother Nancy waited a few moments and then he got down off the rock and he ran around the corner and he saw Tukuma lying there. He took Tukuma and carried Tukuma and put him in his bag and tied him out of the bag and put it aside. And then he went back on the rock and he picked up the pickaxe and he started again. Pang! 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 And there was Brother Lizard passing by. Brother Lizard stood up. "Good morning, Brother Nancy." Brother Nancy, "Good morning, my boy." Brother Lizard said, "So what are you doing today, Brother Nancy?" Brother Nancy said to Brother Lizard, "As you can see, I am on this rock top planting corn." Pang! 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 And he pretended to be digging holes to plant the corn. Brother Lizard looked and then he said, "Bye, Brother Nancy." And he went away around the corner. He's around the corner,